with John McCabe, BBC 94.9. And here's a cast iron guarantee. It's walking through the streets of London, but without any sight of Ralph McTell.
Oi! Good morning to you. It's, what, 20 past two? And I'm joined in the studio by John Kennedy. John McCabe, how are you doing, John?
Yeah, all right there. Not bad. Yeah? Not bad at all, yeah.
Yeah, got a smile on your face. We've got some wagon wheels. I can't believe this.
I thought, why not? I saw them in a shop, 99 pence. It says size matters as well on them.
Yeah, although they have got smaller.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking. They have.
When I was a kid, a wagon wheel was the size of your head, wasn't it? Mind you, maybe I've just got a big head now, I don't
micro
know.
Micro wheels. Yeah. Well, they're getting nearer the Jaffa cake size, aren't they?
Yeah. You know. And you brought some Jaffa cakes in.
Yes, well they are non-fattening and always, you know, used by...
How can that be? How can that be non-fattening? I don't know how that works.
Well, it's only dark chocolate, isn't it? Very little sugar inside, yeah. A little bit of jellied orange, whatever that is, which I like to, you know, remove that bit and just leave it lying on the tongue.
I know, it's a bit like cream eggs. How do you eat them? Yeah, I see.
Cream eggs, that's my advice. That's how you get the world's smallest hole in your tooth. That bloke last night.
Oh, Bernard Hill.
That's what he did, he ate a cream egg.
That was one of the things that they based, X-Files on. Was that particular thing? Because at the time, they couldn't work out how he got this hole. I reckon it was some small parasite that done it, you know.
A little toothy guy, isn't it?
Yeah. but it was a dead straight hole that went through. Jaffa cakes. I'm so glad you didn't bring those Ponzi ones in.
No, I thought we'd have a change.
Black cherry.
Yes, you know, it's when they go, you know, the lime ones and the orange.
Only left-handers eat black cherry Jaffa cakes, that's for sure.
Well, I'm a right-hander. I like the original. Yeah. The original best.
That's it, really. What's Ollie doing with my tea?
Only the make will do.
What are you doing?
He's dipping a biscuit in for him.
I can't believe... Have you just dipped a biscuit in my tea? Get your own tea. You can hire one of my tea bags. Well, you can buy it for... How much did I charge for it? Do you know we had Justin the cabbie on the other day?
You did, yes, I heard.
And
yes.
he done quite well. Do you know, I was walking through London... And suddenly, I'm walking over the lights, and there's this cab there. He goes, I'm going, green man. And it's Justin. He said, he goes, I was on earlier on. He was on Tessa's show earlier, you know. And
he was doing a film review, and he did rather well, actually.
Did he?
Yes.
I think we've got to spike him. He's worrying me. Look, we gave you an intro. Look, you got your own show now. I can't believe it.
No, well, I mean, it's a tiny bit in life, isn't it? I mean, it's a very good station, this is. I mean, it does give people opportunities. Mm-hmm. I have to say that.
Well, it's like, who else would have me? I knock on every single radio station, every single week, say, please give me a job. They say, are you joking?
Remember youth opportunities. It's like senior citizens. It's COP, isn't it?
Yeah. So, right, so John, we got a new departure tonight, haven't we?
Well, just slightly. I mean, we had someone the other week talking about popping down to Woolwich and, you know, and popping down to East London. So to kill two birds with one stone is very simple. And I do believe we need to look at this marvel of engineering that we have sitting in the middle of the Thames. Mm-hmm. Well, not in the middle of the Thames, spanning the Thames, which is the Thames Barrier. It was 25 years this year in February, 25 years upon the Thames, where it says it's been working, saving us all from the disaster of flooding, those of us that the right...
Has it saved us?
Yes, it has. Oh, no doubt about this. I mean, and I'll tell you what's interesting about this now. 1972 is when a bill was passed so that they would consider building... Well, the bill was passed so we could fund and build the actual barrier. Mm-hmm. And I can remember being at school in Hollydale Road, St Thomas the Apostle, Roman Catholic School in Peckham, and the air raid warrants would go off, and we would practice, while they were constructing the barrier, that the threat was so severe of a surge tide hitting London, the sirens would go off, the air raid sirens, the old war air raid sirens, yeah. And there was a plan of how you collapse certain parts of London, and of course, we were all in schools, and London Transport buses would put on extra services, because you remember now, this was all under one Great London Council... Yeah. Inner London Education Authority, yep. London Transport, and you were like given priority as a school kid to go. And you used to have to practice, like literally once a term, flood warning.
Now, this was about, it took 10 years to construct, didn't
it? Yeah, 1984, is it 1984 officially opened? But
yeah.
Actual stats here, I've learned. We're talking now, officially opened 1984. Construction base started late in 1974, so decade it took to span the Thames.
But it was something that they suddenly decided on, we need this immediately, and they got on with it. And this was a massive long-term project. We haven't got that kind of foresight these days, have we?
Well, yes and no. I mean, in the sense that we got the engineering skills. I mean, with the Olympic site coming, I mean, you could argue... with the cost comparative, I mean, it'll probably be something. And I think the ODA, the Olympic Delivery Authority, will get the job done. What the final cost will be, I don't know. I mean, I think most people are in agreement there that costs will probably rise. But one thing we are great at in Britain is civil engineering. And we do not pat ourselves on the back enough, and we do not promote this enough.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to realise, and the reason why we're not walking tonight is because without this barrier, we wouldn't be able to walk in central London.
We'd be swimming, wouldn't we?
We'd be swimming. We'd be canoeing, you know, down the Strand, as they say. Because I'll tell you what, have a look when you're on the Victoria Embankment or any of our embankments in London. And remember, the Thames is unusual in the sense it is a river that comes through Oxfordshire.
Mm-hmm.
And comes, so it's flowing down as a natural river would, so fresh water, but rainwater coming yep. down through streams, whatever, and then flowing into the Thames. But it's also a river then that has an estuary, and with the tidal flow, you have the salt seawater coming mm-hmm. in. So you've got two, there's two sides to the Thames. Upstream,
yep.
as any good naval person would tell you, or waterborne, what they call them, not landlubbers, because that's what I am. Mm-hmm. Upstream means you're up the river. You know, where it's more fresh water. Downstream is towards the estuary. We will talk about that. So, depending what side of the barrier you're on, if you're east of Woolwich, where the barrier is, mm-hmm. you're downstream, and if you're upstream, you'll be, obviously, to the west you will be of it.
Right, let's get to that then. How do we get to the Thames Barrier?
Well, look, funny enough, tonight now, I went along the North Woolwich Road, down by, a lot of cab drivers will know it, Silvertown Way, North Woolwich Road, leads you down to Connaught Bridge by City Airport. And what's unique here, and this is London is a tale of two cities, isn't it? And both sides of the Thames here have something to offer. Now, on the north side of the Thames in North Woolwich, they have a Thames Barrier Park. Now, it's locked up at night, which is a great shame. I mean, I wouldn't have popped in there at night. But right next to it was a street and a road called, it was Barrier Point Road. It's a private development. You'll notice it. As you see the DLR along on North Woolwich Road, you'll see the Docklands Light Railway, or as we call it in the cabaret, Donkey Light Railway. You'll see it elevated up there. You see these big cylindrical, sort of like white towers and buildings, you will, halfway down, right near Pontoon Dock, it's called, DLR. Okay, and what you'll notice is there's a road by, but it's private. But you can actually walk down the side. And I walked down the side of it tonight. I am on someone else's land, but I just walked down, got down the end. And I'll tell you what, at night, this was amazing, the way this was lit up, the barrier. Each of those towers just shimmering with the lights on. And you see the markers on the gates. Because remember, this is a working river. You know, it's a working river, and there's, you know, ships need to come upstream, they do.
Over the barrier, don't they?
They go through the main gates, mm-hmm. they do. Now, you can't, on the left and the right-hand sides, it's the main gates in the centre. There's four pathways there are for shipping to go through. And that's part of the thing when they built this. And it's, and mate, what we're going to talk about, the engineering of it, how it's got a bit of a twist of the gas industry involved here. Would you believe it? On the Thames Barrier, the gas board got in on the act. Hard to believe, isn't it? I don't mean by powering it. So what you have, anyway, by Thames Barrier Pont Road, there is an actual car park. What you'll notice is by Pontoon Dock Station there on North Woolwich Road, there's actually a car and coach park, so you can actually get access to the actual park itself, and it's meant to be a fantastic park. Couldn't get in there, but guess what? It's free. And remember, that's the point of Talk the Walk. When you get there, it's free to use. Mm-hmm. Now, the other side of the Thames, if we were on Woolwich Road and we were to go down Eastmore Street, you come to a place called, it's Hardens Street, and then you get Unity Way, and that's where the barrier control building is. But we also have then right down here is the Thames Barrier Information and Learning Centre. Now, every now and again, just like the charts, like, you have to break your golden rule, don't you?
So you have to, how much?
It's £2 for adults, £1.50 for senior citizens, and £1 for children. Not too expensive.
No, that's all right.
And it's got a learning centre there. It's mm-hmm. got, you know, and it's got some gardeners there. It's, the idea is to try and get children involved, but it's also a working model of the barrier.
So did you get learned up in there?
I didn't know. I couldn't get down there. Right. No, literally, my phone's been going like hotcakes today for other reasons. And honestly, it's... but I've been there a couple of years ago.
Right.
It's an amazing place. Worth a visit. Definitely worth a visit. So, you know, both sides of the Thames here. We've got the Woolwich Ferry nearby. So, if you didn't want to pay to go into the Learning Centre, do you know what? Get across on the Woolwich Ferry if you're driving. Get yourself onto Pier Road, Albert Road, right near City Airport, left onto the Connaught Bridge, onto the Woolwich Road, chuck your left, you're on the car park, and you've got the free bit. So, it's you've got to pay to go across the ferry, though. I'll be very clear. It's always, look, I can't help.
Unless you stow away. Unless yeah. you stow away.
And but hide in the corner.
Yeah.
Or you've got a cloak in the device.
Yeah.
But, basically, it's worth a visit. I mean, because this is, I'd say, one of the engineering wonders of the world. And we're going to look at now, why did they build it? Well, we all know London was flooding. And, I mean, a study took part here. We're talking now, what was it? 1966, World Cup, year report by Herman Bondi. Decision was made, the best solution was bank raising in conjunction with a flood barrier incorporating movable gates built across the river. Now, what people don't realise is, downstream from the barrier, they jack the embankment up. That's physically, they actually jack it up. And that actually, sometimes, is the cheapest option to do that. You build a wall. Mm-hmm. You keep building a wall and it gets higher. The problem with building a wall is you can't see over it.
Yeah.
You know, and it does, in the end, blight what people want to see on the Thames. So, you know, for the upstream part, so we're going west again to the Thames, you know, you don't want to keep jacking the embankments up and up and up and up. So they come up with this idea of this barrier. And so we're looking at what? Legislation was passed in 1972. We've already spoken about this now. In 1974, construction started. Then in 1984. Now, what's interesting about the towers is that the gates, the big main gates, sit on the base of the Thames. These are hollow steel gates. Okay?
They look like helmets sticking out of the ground.
No, they're the towers. That's the towers. That's the
so
towers.
The gates, so in, so the
in,
gates.
In between the towers, you've got these massive gates. Now, if you count, look, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five of the big towers we have. Two either side that are smaller. And then we got narrower gates either side of the barrier, which drop down, they do, to block the Thames off. But in the middle, because we want to get shipping through, and remember, you've got the keels and the bases of ships. We've got to get them through. So, a gas cock. You ever heard of a gas main cock?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you think of a gas main cock, what it is, if you can picture a tennis ball, yeah, and you put it down, imagine putting draw a circle on a bit of paper, Joel.
All right, I can draw that.
Yeah, just draw a circle on a bit of paper.
Yeah.
And what I want you to do now is...
Will I be able to give this to my grandma for Christmas?
You can,
All right, fair enough.
No cat's whiskers here.
Okay.
Now, draw two vertical lines in the middle of that circle.
In the middle of it?
In the middle of it. So what you'll end up with... Something like that. Something similar. No, what you've done is fine.
No, I've got that.
So what you do, the gas cock, that middle bit would be hollow. Now take one third of that. Now one third of that little circle there, that little curve bit, catch that in. That's the shape that sits on the bottom of the Thames.
Right.
And it sits there flat in its own little curved bed. And the minute they get warnings, now the warnings up to 36 hours. They've got monitoring stations up on all rigs. In the South End Pier, I understand, it's the Metrological Office, actually do the storm, what do they call it? They got an actual, what's in that? Here it is, here's the words the Metrological use, Stormtide Forecasting Service. Okay, and they've got things, I mean, what they rely on is, like, obviously the barrier itself has a good idea when a surtide's coming, because obviously there's certain things will happen, I'm sure they, you know, wave motions and patterns, but what they have to be careful of, if you raise the barrier too quick, you'll get a bounce back, you'll get a wave hit it, and then it will bounce and it will flood the downstream part right close by. What they want to be able to do is raise the barrier in defence of London without... Because there's other gates. What I didn't realise is there's other barriers on the Thames estuary. You see? There are. The Barking. Barking barrier. Yeah.
But does that go across the whole Thames?
No. It will be a gate, it will be, that will allow a certain part and Barking to take water in. And you'll notice on certain docks, they'll use gates, they will, to take, just open them up and then let the tide coming in be soaked up. So it's a bit like, what they call it, wetlands. But, you know, this is, you know, at the moment, you've got to remember, it's quite controversial, isn't it? When people have been talking about building on the Thames estuary.
Yeah.
And this is part of the reason why. When you start building, you need to build in flood defences. Now, when you start walling, you are now funnelling water. And that's why people are already talking about either another barrier further out so that we can deflect, like, the tidal, the surge tides from the North Sea coming. And that's a real nasty sea we're talking about here. Because we're actually talking about water that surges from Gulfstream Atlantic. It goes right round the coast of Britain, ends up in the North Sea, and a certain time of year, spring, is when we get these surge tides. It was February, March. They're always worried about surge tides in London. And what they have to do is be able to predict when to put the barrier up.
Right. I didn't know that the barrier went up gradually. I thought they just shoved it up.
No, but they can. I mean, literally, when you do it, it's like 4 minutes. You're talking up. This is like something out of... I mean,
it's got to work, hasn't it? You can't suddenly turn the key. Oh, one of those ain't going up.
You've also got a maintenance schedule coming in, because you can't afford for this not to work. Because imagine now you open up most of the barrier and then there's one bit doesn't work. What's going to happen?
You're going to funnel
of water. Just the effect of the tide the other side, a bit like a dam it will look like. So this is an important part of London. In other words, there's a lot of us wouldn't be here because history tells us, and history has a habit of not predicting the past, but it tells us that we've had floods in the past. We're talking now, what was it? 1928, 14 people drowned. In 1953, there was a disastrous flooding on the east coast of the Thames Estuary with a total of over 300 lives. Now, can you imagine what would happen if central London... And we've seen films. We've seen films of what people are predicting what would happen to central London. So it's so important that we understand this is to be honest with you, old Father Thames, it's the lifeblood of the city, but you cannot control Mother Nature, or when you do, you've got to be very, very careful.
I mean, this has got to be hard, because water's heavy, isn't it?
A litre of water weighs 1 kilogram, So those big steel gates have to not just hold up water, but you're talking about the pressure, but when they come out of the bottom, you see the big yellow arms on these steel towers, you will, the big yellow arms, pulling up the gates from the bottom. In the middle of those five towers, the main four gates, and they will come up out of the water, like watching Thunderbirds. You remember that bit when Tracy Island pops out of the old swimming pool? It is like watching something coming out of the Thames. And I actually think, my God, wouldn't it be great to get the day when they do raise it? Must be fantastic to see. You know, because, I mean, they're able to spin it up as well. For maintenance, they actually pull the gates up, and then they're upended. They're in air, in the middle of the air, but shipping can still go through. Underneath, or they'll leave a gate open, and you can see it. When I went down there tonight, you'll see the marker board out. Very similar, like the Blackwall Tunnel tidal flow.
I wonder how many times they've raised these in anger.
Oh, lots of times. It used to be only thought to be two or three times. We're talking, I think it gets raised in the spring, something like 20, 30 times now. I mean, this is not, we don't joke about it anymore.
No.
You know, I mean, this was built for a specific reason. And let's be honest, it was probably built to save the City of London, the financial centre.
Is it fit for purpose in the 21st century?
It's fit for purpose at this moment in time and probably for another at least 10 to 15 years, I'd say. But the Environment Agency, who are in charge of the barrier, and this is what's really funny about governments and governance in London, isn't it? I mean, do you remember when we talked about Tower Bridge? We got the bridge controller. Down here in Greenwich, we got the barrier controller. What a job that must be to have, isn't it? My job, I'm the barrier controller. Yeah. I'm the man that makes the decision, or the woman that makes the decision when we're going to, like, press the klaxons and away we go. You know, and we're going to save London from flooding. It's one of those probably, you know, jobs where you're dealing with lots of information from different agencies, from the meteorological offices we've worked out, from your own forecasting, from worrying about bad weather to seasons, because that's important here when we get surge tides anyway. And then, you know, you can't fall asleep on the job, just like, you know.
No.
But in the same sense, though, it's you're predicting something that's going to happen. I mean, there must be times, though, when, you know, all of a sudden something freakish happens. So the barrier does have to go up very, very quickly. Such an intricate job, it's an important job, and like I said, this is a wonder of London, a wonder of engineering. I mean, how did we build it? That's what I want to know. How did we get them things, you know, when you think of it, we didn't build these via caissons, did we? This is about people bedding, you know, obviously these towers, isn't it, first, and you must have, you know, and then literally lowering stuff underneath the beds for these to sit on.
I mean, as you said, we master in civil engineering. We always have. We're great builders. Or we have been in the past. And this is testament. As you said, this is one of the great wonders of the world. Because of the amount of water it holds. But I think the only other place that I've ever seen which is more impressive is the Hoover Dam. I'd like you to go to the Hoover Dam and do a talk and walk about that, you know,
Hoover
one
Dam.
Day. Yeah,
that's in that film Transformers. They reckon that's just it's a cover, isn't it, for something else? No, honestly. No, but I mean, 80 staff, actually. Look, here we are. Operating
80
barrier.
People working
80 people work on the barrier, maintain the barrier, and dangerous conditions can be forecast up to 36 hours in advance. And like I said, they work with the Meteorological Office. But like I said, because they've got some of their own computer where they're able to, computers are able to analyse themselves. So they've got a good idea, I'm sure. And it's, remember, that all they're worried about is the level of the tide. And then you have to remember, then there's going to be issues then with water going the other way. Here's the thing, you see. It doesn't just flood that way. London has a habit, because we get heavy rainwater upstream, we hear about it down in Teddington, don't we? Sometimes we hear about the water. Do you remember last year when it rose a bit on Putney and the odd car gets done on the old causeways near the old Putney Bridge there? And what happens? If the barrier's up, what you can end up doing is that water can back up. So sometimes they have to open the barrier to let fresh water out.
What I want to know is that if the Thames is salt water at one end, fresh water at the other, where is it? Where does that stop? Is there a line? There's no more salt.
We've got a mix in the middle, haven't we? We've got that stuff where you don't mind swilling your... Well, I wouldn't say don't do this at home, where... Then when you put a bit of salt water in yourself, probably, just to swill your mouth out, if you've got an ulcer. Probably get that bit, there's a bit where
I don't know if I'll be getting a cup of Thames to wash my mouth out.
And you've got to remember, other stuff goes into the Thames every now and again, so it's probably, you know...
Rats, water rats, that's
don't
in
try
the Thames.
This at home. Yeah. But anyway, cost of operating the barrier, we're talking up to £6 million a year, plus £5 million on walls and embankments. That was at 2001, so if we're going on Olympic cost, they're probably double those figures.
Yeah.
Easy. Double those figures, easily, easily. Now, lots and lots and lots and lots of looking. Here we go. Thames tidal defences. 32 kilometres, actually, downstream, we're talking, of flood defences. And, you know, these defences include 60-metre high barking barrier. It's just a drop gate. So it's the gate they open and the gate they close.
Yeah.
But this barrier is up high, the barking barrier. So it's not one that comes out of the bottom. It's just a barrier that's up high and then they can drop it. They can't block off.
Right.
Or you can rise it. So we're going to maybe have to go down to Bark and have a look at that, you know, in the future. I mean, you know, again, I'm not frightened of going to East London, you know.
You just hope you get a fare back. I mean, a lot of the design and a lot of the plans that they looked at the Netherlands, didn't they? Because it's like the Netherlands.
Yeah, I mean, the Netherlands is. I mean, it's below seawater. It's the flatlands, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, you go over there in a group and you stand too close together. They want to give you a fixed pattern, you know, so making a hill.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, shadow.
But they've got the whole thing about, you know, the levees and stuff. But it's unthinkable. I mean, I remember it was about a year ago where we had a flood warning that was a bit concerning. I thought, hold on a minute. We're just all underwater. You and me here, underwater.
Completely. People don't realise it, what the effects. I mean, we're talking when I was at school, you see, that period of time, Peckham. It would have, you know, Peckham, South East London. And you think, actually, it ain't that far, is it? Millwall Docks ain't that far. New Cross, you know. When you think, because we all forget the Thames isn't straight. The Thames has got lots of curves and bends in it. Now, what is interesting, when I was over down at Barrier Point Road, and you'll need to be on Barrier Point Road or nearby to get some views, some brilliant views. Not just when you're at the bottom there or when you're in that park, getting the wonderful views of the Thames Barrier. What you will notice is when you get these wonderful views then of the dome late at night with the spikes all lit up, and I was at an actual angle where I'm looking at the dome and then behind it was Canary Wharf. And it just shows you how crooked bits of the Thames are.
Oh, I know.
We've got the dome in Greenwich, in North Greenwich, actually blocking and then silhouetting a view upon Canary Wharf. I mean, but if you look at the map, you'll see the two big bends in the river. You know, it just they just look like a little tonsil hanging there to do. I mean, you know, you see the Isle of Dogs, we spoke about that before.
If we didn't get in the way, there'd be Oxbow Lakes before ending too long.
But again, you know, this is Mother Nature we're dealing with here. And I think people don't realise, just watch the Thames and watch it when the tide moves. And it's frightening, the speed of that Thames. I had a cup of tea at my favourite place last night, and I watched
the Chelsea
Tea Hut on Queenstown Road by Chelsea.
Did you avail yourself to any of their food?
Not last night. Okay. No, she took away to light. I took away a peach pie. I did.
All right.
Steak and kidney pie. Mm-hmm.
What would you reckon? What would you say their signature dishes are? Bacon sandwich? What'd you say? Egg and bacon sandwich?
Or? Egg and bacon.
Yeah.
Superb. But Pete doesn't cook bacon on Saturdays. So it's just egg. No. But I'll tell you what, they've got a brilliant chilli sauce down there at the moment. It's a bit lethal.
Now, with this chilli sauce put Stuart in Stanmore to shame, should Stuart in Stanmore be scared of that chilli sauce?
Send him to Scotland.
Yeah? You reckon?
No, yes, definitely.
I'll tell you what, Stuart in Stanmore. He won't ring up tonight, Ollie, because he knows that I'll be talking about Conservative MPs or prospective candidates' harassment charges. That's why he won't call up, so we can have a laugh about that. Come on. Right.
But what we noticed was that just if you just watch the movement of the Thames and how, you know, so we're talking about when the geese were coming, there was a Canada geese in the Thames, and they've just, you know, I thought quite clever, just letting the tide take them along under Chelsea Bridge, and the speed they were going at, yet they were making no effort whatsoever. So what we have here, George, is a tale of two cities. Yes, one side, I'm afraid, we had to, you know, buy a cup of tea the other week, didn't we, in Regent's Park. One side, you may, if you want to go into the learning centre, you don't have to. Would cost a couple of pound.
I don't want to go under the tunnel under the Thames, because I bet there's a tunnel under the Thames, isn't there? A maintenance tunnel.
Because they bring the gates up, don't they?
So how do they get from one pillar to the other?
By boat.
Do they?
I presume. Must be. I mean, unless they get the gates up, I mean, I want to walk along. But I mean, that side of it, I mean, I would love to get on it. I mean, but, you know, actually physically go out there with it in a boat and have a little... swish round and then press the button and get the barrier up. I mean, that must be, do you know, you could charge for that.
Yeah, of course.
I'm sorry, this would be...
Yeah, but it'd be like £500,000, wouldn't it, if you want to...
No, but, you know, I'm all for, like, I believe in, you know, if you need to bring a bit of income in, I think, you know, that'd be a good thing to do the old national lottery down there, wouldn't it, you know?
But this is one of the things that I always find impressive about these kind of structures. They can't fail.
No, you can't afford for them to fail, no. And that's why the maintenance program is, you know, you have to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, so important. You can't, one gate, I mean, what is sad about the barrier is when they do close it, odd things do get bounced up against it, including bodies. That has happened.
Because
you've got to remember then, when the tide's going out, if they close three or four of the gates in the middle and you're letting the tide just go out, because they can control then the outflow. So in a weird way, we've interfered here at Mother Nature, haven't we?
Mm.
We're interfering though, and we're trying not to interfere too much, only when we think it's going to do us real harm.
Mm.
And that's important. Because in the end, I think everyone realises on this planet, you know, you can't stop the rain. You can't stop the sun shining.
No.
I mean, you know, and we are damaging our planet, and we've got to learn to be a bit better on how we live upon it. But at the same time, though, we have to realise that we're here, and things aren't going to change quick overnight. And I don't know what the cost of the next barrier is going to be, because they reckon that today's prices, or 2001 prices, 1.3 billion. Now, they're already saying...
Hey, 1.3 billion?
At today's, at 2001 prices.
Ah, we've given three times that amount to Northern Rock in 5 minutes. You know,
well, I know that, I mean, but that's banking for you, isn't it? I mean, it's a different world, that is. That's not private, that's not public.
See, I don't think that 1.3 billion is all that much, considering it's going to save London. Imagine if London went down. That would, you're talking about hundreds of billions.
Well, at the time, it cost, they reckon, like, you know, this is the construction of the barrier and associated works with a massive project. The final cost of flood defences was approximately £535 million, valued at £1.3 billion at 2001 prices. Most of it come from the taxpayer, or ratepayers, 75% of the approved costs and ratepayers. So it was the usual taxpayers. But they reckon the cost of not having that, the cost of it, not having it, would be up to £30,000 million, £30 billion, if we got,
And as well as hundreds of thousands of lives lost.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm just well, look, forget, if we just took lives out of the equation, which are more important than buildings, but the destruction, the underground be flooded, gas, water, electric, telecoms, all affected, all flooded, you know, water,
it would be a major disaster, the like that probably the world hasn't seen, because it would be one of the financial institutions of the world going under, and, you know, the ramifications of that, because... You know, probably the whole of governance would be over if it went down.
Well, I mean, we're talking Parliament. I mean, all that would go underwater and people...
Hang about. Now it's starting to sound attractive here, John. Fantastic. So where are we going to be next week?
Next week, I'm actually thinking, do you know what? Now we're over here, I think we need to go... We're going to go around City Airport and
all
look
right.
around there, because, I mean, it's been a bit controversial lately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is modern London. We've got XL, we've got Connaught Bridge there, because, actually, do you know what? When you stand on the Connaught Bridge or even stop the traffic, I quite like it when the plane takes off and it's dead in line with you. And then you hear the noise, you think, whoa, that's a bit near. Then you think, actually, did I like that after all? But there's something nice, I'm going to allege, something nice about City Airport. But we are going to go on a little bit of a walk in a modern part of London, because it's a bit odd here.
Mm-hmm.
You drive certain
I'm desperate to go from City Airport. Even though I'm always moaning about airports, I'd love to go from there.
Well, I'll tell you what's odd about here, though. Some of these roads, you drive along, and it's like no one's ever swept up. Like, for like a decade, it looks like.
Well, filthy.
Well, no, parts of it are. I mean, because it's too modern, because there's actually roads been built, the DLR's in, the airport's one end. We've got some new flats on the Thames, and then there's a bit of industry here, because it does smell a bit of yeast down here, by the way. You do get the old, hang on, it's a bit different. And all of a sudden, you'll notice, like, a bit of weed just growing out from under a flyover. And it's there's parts of this that are not well kept, actually. And because there is an airport, and we're bringing visitors into London, to be honest with you, not very good in my book. That's 0 out of 10 for whoever the local council is, because if you can't get a broom out on your roads, you know, people are paying. It's not just about building flats down the road and waiting for the council tax to come in. You built the road, you're waiting for the investment, well, get the broom out, you know. And it's, create a few jobs. They're obviously needed.
John, I'd like to cut your jib. Thank you very much indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, that was John Le Cabbie. Ollie, can you... John, we got Simon here. He's got some info. Morning, Simon.
Yeah, morning, George. How are you?
Yeah, say hello to John.
Hello, John. How are
morning,
you?
Morning, Simon.
Morning. Yeah, I've just listened to what you were saying, and I'm just on the way to work now. We actually are located at Barrier Gardens Pier, about 200 yards downstream from the barrier.
Oh, fantastic.
Just on the way to work now, we've got a changeover of Sugar Ships at Tate & Lyle's distillery.
Sugar Ships? Oh, Ollie, well, I want to start wearing a Sugar Ship, yeah.
That's one that's saying it, go on.
Yeah, and you were talking about 5-10 minutes ago about how they get from span to span, and you'd like to know about how they do that.
Oh, yeah, because John said it was a boat. I'm hoping there's a tunnel underneath. What is it?
There is, in fact, a tunnel.
No! No, I didn't. Oh, my research let me down.
There is, yeah. And I'm quite lucky. We've been on the river, our family, for over 200 years.
Fantastic.
And we've been involved. Well, we weren't involved as such with the building of it, but where our location is for the company, we were right on top of it. And I was fortunate as a kid to actually be taken into the tunnel when it was being built.
Ooh.
And, it's quite an amazing place, actually.
How big is the tunnel?
It goes literally from Alpha Span, which is just where the control centre is,
mm-hmm. yep.
on the south side. It goes right over to the north side by a place where you used to be, a place called Wardswolf, which is now a great
Wardswolf,
big tower.
Wardswolf, I can see it, yeah.
And so is it sort of like the same kind of size as the London Underground?
No, it's a lot wider.
It's a wider tunnel?
It's a wider tunnel, yeah. And you can get literally from right to from the south to the north side straight across in this tunnel.
Hmm. See, that's amazing.
I want to go in that tunnel.
Yeah, I mean, because I mean, what's interesting about it? So I used to work in the gas industry. You see, and it's what they used to talk about when we were building the tunnel.
Yeah.
I mean, building the barrier was about, like I said, about the gas cock, how mm-hmm. it sits on the bottom. You know, this is just, yeah. It must be. I mean, honestly, this actually must be one of the wonders that's worth seeing in London, to see this lift and come out of the water. These.
So, Simon, did you? So you remember this being built then, do you?
Yeah. I was only about 10 or so, but my father...
So that means you was a perfect age to be curious. So what did they do? How did they go about doing this?
Well, it's a little bit vague. I wish my dad was on the phone, actually, because he's actually a waterman. He's been a waterman all his life. And
What does a waterman mean?
Original
a waterman. Well, you've got a waterman. Yeah, well, you've got a waterman, freeman, and lighterman of the Thames. And he was a pilot on the Thames, you know, bringing all the ships in for the berths and everything. And where we were located was just upstream from where the barrier is now, just by Anchor and Hope Lane, which I'm parked at the moment to get to work.
Got it, I can see it. You're in the southeast side, aren't you?
Yeah. And, basically the whole of the river there was completely open, and it took about 2 or 3 years in prep to actually get all the dredging and everything for the location site all ready. And it was a huge, huge, huge undertaking task. But... as I say, I'm a little bit sketchy on the details. It's a shame your dad's not up. He could have phoned you up, but...
Well, I tell you what, Simon, thank you very much indeed for...
That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I'm 42, so probably similar age. And like I said, you've got someone there that's worked there, grew up in the area there, and then worked in that area and seen that happen. And mm-hmm. like I said, and then, I mean, you know, hearing an air raid siren as a child, and it's not about someone dropping bombs. You're worrying about, you know, water, seawater.
Why don't they just all give it? Why don't they just all issue us all with rubber rings? That would work, wouldn't it?
Little arm ones.
Yeah, little arm ones.
And a snorkel.
Yeah. John, thank you very much, Steve, for coming in.